back to the second hour of It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Coplin. It's time for this week's in-depth interview with a special guest from the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome back. And if you just joined us, I'd like to let you know this is a two-hour show in which we try to explore whether we have more in common than divides us. In the first hour of the show, we ask questions that matter, avoiding politics, instead focusing on the issues that underlie politics and current events, issues that affect us all, young or old, locally and globally. In this, the second hour, we balance the creative with the intellectual by featuring in-depth interviews with local, national and international guests from the arts. And the show combines a debate topic with an arts interview because I feel discussion and creativity are two of the most vital ways we engage with the world. It's all a question of balance. And if you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website itsaquestionofbalance.com. You can hear podcasts of all past shows there and connect with me on social media, should you wish. So, who do I have as my special guest from the arts this week? Well, I'm very pleased to be talking to Trash McSweeney, singer, songwriter and creator of the five-piece orchestral art band The Red Paintings, which was officially born at the dawn of the millennium. After suffering a near-fatal seizure, visionary performer Trash McSweeney now sees colour in music and seeks to share with the world the ideas he has seen and felt. Originally from Australia, Trash is based in London and Los Angeles and is currently in the middle of a world tour in support of the release of the Red Paintings album, The Revolution Is Never Coming. Trash originates all the Red Paintings musical and staging concepts, and the band is known for its unique and compelling live performances featuring theatrical and art elements. Band members are costumed elaborately with themes ranging from geishas to aliens to sea creatures. And the Red Paintings are also renowned for inviting artists local to their shows to come and paint living and blank canvases during the musical performance to reflect their feelings about the music. The band's multimedia performances stimulate the senses and the mind and appeal to Baroque, pop, steampunks, metalheads, indie rock fanatics and beyond. The album The Revolution Is Never Coming was 5 years in the making and features a 35-piece orchestra, 22-piece choir, harp players, French horn, theremin and more across 13 tracks of biting futuristic alternative rock. The album was recorded and mixed in world-class studios around the globe, and the two singles released from the album have charted in the UK, Europe, America and Australia. The innovative Alice in Wonderland-themed music video for the single Streets Fell Into My Window picked up a wider range of awards at festivals worldwide. The band has a dedicated following, and the album The Revolution Is Never Coming was largely funded by donations from fans all over the world. The album's producer, Brian Karlstrom, stated, "In my entire 30-year career, I've not mixed such a diverse, colourful and emotionally dynamic album such as this. It's like a 21st century War of the Worlds." Welcome to the show, Trash.
Hello.
How are you doing? I know you're in the middle of a tour, so you're probably quite tired, I imagine.
Well, I was actually interested in the news that I was hearing then.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I was interested in the news I was hearing then. I was getting right into it.
I wanted to ask you, the Red Paintings is a phenomenally creative band, both musically and visually. I'm curious what your first experience of art was growing up.
Oh, no one's ever asked me that. Well, just like I always say, that when you're like, you know, 15, 16 and your ears are opening for the first time, you know, you see the world as such a huge creative place. For me, that time was finding, I would have been around that age and finding the artist Mark Ryden, perhaps. Mm-hmm. He'd probably be the first person that really opened me up to art. But my parents didn't really get into art or music, so it was really something I had to find on my own. I wasn't introduced to it from them, so to speak.
Oh, interesting. And you had a non-traditional start to being a rock musician. You didn't kind of always want to do music, as a lot of people say. How did you come to start playing guitar and writing songs?
Well, as I said, I never really had a musical background in my family. Bless my soul, my family are pretty cool, but they weren't really educated, so to speak, and left school when they were like 16, 17 and just went into kind of regular jobs. Like my dad worked at Ford's Motor Company and my mum basically read me on her own. So it was always going to be an emotional experience, the attachment for me. So when I was in my teens, I had a breakup. It really affected me. I didn't know how to deal with it. And in a nutshell, I picked up a guitar that was sitting at my house that I never played, and I wrote a song called I Need You. And then my whole world opened up, and I started writing songs from there on in. Next thing I knew, I was in a band touring the world.
Wow, that's pretty intense. So you wrote a song, just picked up a guitar and started writing a song.
Well, I never claimed to be a professional, that's for sure. And I wasn't really someone to get guitar lessons and all the rest. Yeah, my parents made me go to church when I was young, and was a guitarist who was in that church band, and he gave me a few guitar lessons and sold me a guitar that I ended up selling to a friend, and long story there, but I never really had an interest in music, and I guess maybe how most people do, like I didn't want to get technical or nothing like that. It was honestly just a form of therapy. I just needed to express myself as a human being. I didn't feel like anybody understood me, and the best way for me to express and move forward in my everyday life and to deal with my own issues was to either paint or create music on a guitar, violin, or in the end, a piano.
Right, yeah. I mean, I suppose your experience just shows, you know, how much of our humanity, as you're saying, and our emotions can be translated into art, because, you know, that was the whole genesis of you moving into doing the red paintings, was the pain of this relationship breaking up and how you wanted to express yourself about that.
Well, I found a best friend, someone who didn't talk back to me. It just sounds like I'm delusional, but it really was like that. I thought, I have a best friend. When I need to talk to somebody, I would pick up an instrument and start collaborating on a song that was in my headspace, in my heart, in my utopia. Like, it was all there. So that was the best way to explain it, really. I mean, honestly, that's how it is, and it was for me. It still is to this day.
Yeah. That doesn't sound delusional to me.
Some people think I am.
I think, not for that reason, anyway. I don't know about if there's any other reasons, but...
That could be true.
But I think, you know, creativity, especially if you, you know, believe in the collective unconscious and all of that, I mean, it is a connection, I think, when you're, you know, deeply connected to your artistic, creative side that is, you know, you call it a friend, but it's definitely a relationship, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the sad thing about all this is that I feel like music is a natural resource and certainly a form of communication. Mm. My struggles with all of this are, I simply just wanted to communicate with people and find like-minded people in the world, and find people who I call are the same breed as me. And we've created an incredibly powerful fan base around the world. Like, there is not one place I don't play where there's not a Red Penny fan present. And we play in some of the smallest towns in America. I would never have thought we'd have fans, but there's this red painting thread that's just ever so lightly just flowing through the world, which is just amazing to me. The negative of all this is, you know, we have this thing called the music industry, and I feel like music has been exploited. This beautiful, natural form of communication and what I call a natural resource is completely exploited into, you know, you've got to be in the top 40, you have to have a certain amount of units sold, or record labels don't want to get involved. And everything is tainted. And most musicians, I guess in the Western world, you know, when you go to write a song, you've got this in the back of your mind, it has to be 3.5 minutes, it has to feel and sound like this, otherwise I won't get success from it. And that's such a shame to me, because I'm stuck in that world and I fight with that on an everyday basis. And it's definitely changed the way I see color in music, that's for sure, the business side of all of this. So I hate that, though. It's not something that I enjoy at all.
Yeah. No, I think that's something also that I find disappointing. And unfortunately, with the opening up of digital and the way music has gone, that, you know, what remains of the music industry is going more and more in that commercial direction of having to have an instant hit. Something has to be instantly consumable. You know, don't bore us, get to the chorus. And, you know, it's, I think, the enemy of originality, definitely. Because you know things that are more complex, things that are more interesting, they're not going to just grab you in the first 30 seconds necessarily. Yeah.
Well, it's contrived, I would say. a lot of the stuff.
Yeah.
But not everybody's like that. I mean, you get these bands like Mogwai and I would say Bjork, and there's a band in Australia called Something for Kate, and I believe those bands are writing the music that they feel and nobody tells them otherwise.
Yeah. But those bands that you've mentioned, you know, came up at a time where the music industry was different to what it is now. I think it's hard right now that I think there are bands creating original music, but it's hard to get any traction because, you know, to get noticed, to really stand out because of the way the music industry has gone. But of course, touring is the way to go, and you are a phenomenal touring band. I mean, I'm just overawed by your touring schedule. I don't know how you even do it.
I'm a robot. I'm a machine. Actually, they cloned me about 10 times. I've died 8 times. I think there's two robots left. But before we move on from that, you are right about that. Those bands that I did mention are from the 90s, and it was a time where people did buy physical CDs. I mean, bought lots of physical CDs because that was really the only way to hear music. So bands did make money on their materials. And yes, I mean, a band like us only really just started touring and breaking through in, say, 2007. 2006, 2007, because the Dresden Dolls took us on a world tour, and all of a sudden people knew there was this band called the Red Pennings that had this stage show and had this lead singer called Trash who, you know, wrote these songs. And so, yes, it is definitely harder this day and age to break through. I mean, I have constant meetings with labels and managers and all that, and just even the way the meetings are run now have changed over the last, let's say, 8 to 10 years, I've found, in what the demands are and what people expect to be put on the table before they even start a business relationship with an artist has changed dramatically. And that's really scary, not only for me, but for a lot of new artists. I think it's extremely intimidating. But that doesn't mean that there's not a way out or there's not a way through this to be successful. There obviously are. You just got to think outside the box.
Right, yeah. Do you mean, when you say it's scary, do you mean in terms of they want so much more creative control over your career and so much more access to different revenue streams?
Well, the one thing that we do a lot on our tours around the world is we get a lot of local artists. So there's always local bands opening up for us, and they talk to me before or after the show and just express where they're at in their careers and kind of ask me for advice. And this is what I hear the most. Hey man, how do you tour? We can't get out of our town. We're lucky to get to the next city because we just can't afford. Nobody wants to book us, number one. And even when we go and play, there's hardly anybody coming. What the hell are we going to do? We think we're a great band. Our family tells us we're good. We've got great friends that come and support us, but they don't keep coming to every show. And I hear that a lot. And what am I meant to tell these people? Okay, well, sacrifice everything that you have. You don't get to see your family if you're going to tour the road. You're going to have no money. Actually, you're going to be in debt for a long time because you're going to put so much into marketing just so people know that you exist. And who can even afford to do that when they're working these, you know, 9-to-5 jobs or they're at universities? They're not making money. They can't. So they're stuck. It's fine. So many local bands are stuck around the world.
Yeah. So we've sort of lost in the music industry this sort of nurturing of new artists. Is that the worst thing that's happened, would you say?
Well, I would say that there doesn't seem to be a nice platform for people to bounce off that's strong and that has longevity. That's maybe the best way to describe it. So the social media thing's pretty cool, and I call it fad book, Facebook, that is. I mean, it is. It's a fad, and things will go away. All things seem to. And I feel like social media is great, but, I mean, what are you going to do? Buy your ads? You know, a lot of people can do this thing where they buy all these likes. Eventually, that's going to go away because Facebook and all the social media accounts, they're onto that kind of stuff. It's just making things stick. It's just so hard to get your fan base to stick.
Yeah.
It's only worked for me because I've sacrificed so much. I mean, I barely see my family once a year if I'm lucky. We're constantly exhausted, constantly tired. I've got a band that's in so much debt, I don't even say how much it is, but what I did realize with me was the more sacrifice that I put into it and the more times that I jumped, metaphorically speaking, off the cliff, I did land on my feet, and the opportunities have ended up coming to me from places I never thought that they would come, and it's put me in really incredible situations as a human being, meaning the experiences that I get are so much more fruitful, and they're not about finance, they're about the experiences I have with other human beings.
Yeah.
That's what it is for me.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about a very hard road, but your band is phenomenal and the new album is amazing. We're going to play some tracks from it, but right now we're going to go to a break. We'll be back after these messages.
music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copeland. Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ocean's flat, but steamer lane. No white horses to play the game.
It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Ciao, I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly, family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Daniel and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copeland, and my special guest from the arts this week, Trash McSweeney, singer, songwriter, and creator of the five-piece orchestral art band, The Red Paintings. And if you want more information about The Red Paintings, you can go to their website, theredpaintings.com. And before the break, we were talking about how difficult it is to be an independent artist and make it in the current climate in the music industry. But I would like to focus on how well The Red Paintings have done. The first time I saw The Red Paintings perform in LA, it was like a creative force swept over me. There were amazing artists creating paintings live on stage. The band was in amazing costumes. The music just reached out and pulled me in, and you, Trash, as a frontman, were so impassioned. It was a true multimedia experience that engaged me on all levels. So I know you have made incredible sacrifices, but the result is amazing, as is shown by the fans you have all over the world. But I'm imagining the band didn't start out exactly in this form with this kind of performance. So I'm wondering how you came to conceive all of this.
Well, in Australia, I went to University of Visual Arts. In Coffs Harbour, at Coffs Harbour University, which is a coastal town. And I just got obsessed with art, I guess. I got obsessed with art, and nobody really cared for the art that I was creating. I had a lot of trouble getting exhibits. It just was one of those things. But when I picked up a guitar, I saw it as a paintbrush. And straight away, I thought, I wonder if I can mix these two mediums. I wonder if I can make this work. So the idea right from day one was me with a pen and paper, honestly sat down. I studied the music industry and everything that was happening at the time. I looked at the art world, and I thought, I'm going to put all these elements that I'm not really seeing together, put them together in the Red Paintings world. And the Red Paintings was born. It was basically a movement that I got obsessed with was the Dada movement, late 1800s, where Dada was kind of, a lot of people had something to say, but didn't really have a platform to say it, as in like musicians and artists and bringing these people together from opera singers to political people, musicians and so forth. And I wanted to do that with the Red Paintings. So we have the theatrical side, metaphoric messages through all the art. There's operamen sometimes. We have the string sections. We have, obviously, the human canvases. And the list goes on. And the stage shows are changing every 6 months. So it's not like I'm touring this thing for 5 years. I'm constantly changing the ideas of the stage shows, the costuming, the human canvas heads, the paint we use, right down to the messages of the songs and the songs that we play, and the list goes on.
Mm, amazing. You're a great live band. I would recommend anyone listening to go and see you. And you are going to be playing in Santa Cruz, I believe, on the 22nd of June at the Catalyst. So if you're local, head down there. And if you go to the Red Paintings website, you can find out all the places that they're touring in America. I'd like to play You're Not One of Them from your new album, The Revolution Is Never Coming. Can you tell us a bit about what inspired this track?
Actually, it's a bit depressing, I guess. I was going, when you're in a band, it's extremely hard. It's just dealing with people on a regular basis. Just you're in a van all the time and you really have your moments. And I remember being in Australia with the Australian band. I did change the lineups. And we were going through a time where I realized that we just didn't connect as people. Mm-hmm. We didn't connect. And I was sitting there going, there's a brick wall in front of us and you're not one of them and you will not continue on this journey. It's not because I don't want you to. I just know that you don't understand why you're here. Mm-hmm. And so I wrote a song called You're Not One of Them, and that was basically it. And I felt like I could take these people to incredible places, meaning I was prepared to sacrifice everything, even if they weren't, so they could have these experiences, but they decided to jump off the train, or the UFO, as I say.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's hear this now. This is You're Not One of Them by the Red Paintings from the new album, The Revolution Is Never Coming.
Scared, I hold your hand until the very end. Ghost tracks and notes are in the air. Misfortune's here, but time holds no bears. You're not one of them. You're not one of. You're not one of them. You're not one of. You're not one of. What do you think you're getting for? You're not one of them. You're not one of. You're not.
Well, that was You're Not One of Them from the new album The Revolution Is Never Coming by the Red Paintings, fronted and created by my arts guest this week, Trash McSweeney. And as I mentioned earlier, this album was 5 years in the making, features an orchestra, a choir, all kinds of instrumentalists supporting the usual guitar, violin, cello, bass and drums, which is the core of the band. I'm just wondering, Trash, how you held the vision of the album in your mind over this number of years.
Oh man, it was hard work. Again, it's always been a band with just kind of battles with the industry. So I shopped the idea of the record in Australia and nobody wanted to take it on. Actually, I heard from three major labels that I was creating, and I quote, a war of the worlds and it won't sell. And I didn't believe that. So I thought, okay, so I went to the fan base and I said, this is the deal. If you want a record from this band, we're going to need your support. And so we raised about $160,000, and I started going into studios as we were raising the funds. The reason it took 5 years was really as simple as this. I started working with engineers/producers, even though I produced the record, and it was really hard for them to create the vision that I had in my head and in my heart through the desk, meaning that just EQing and panning stuff, it just couldn't get... They just couldn't get it right. And I really struggled with that. And I must be such a hard person to work with because I see music as color. So I'm saying, hey, man, that's supposed to sound red and that's supposed to sound blue. So could you, like, pan that so it sounds blue on the left-hand side? And they're like, what the hell are you talking about, dude? But there was one engineer I worked with, and he'd worked with Bjork, and he said I was really similar to the way her dynamics in the studio, which was interesting, and how difficult that was as well. And he told me a story where she ran out of the studio once and he had to run after her, which did happen to me on two occasions. But in a nutshell, I did have a vision and I knew that I could create it and I wasn't going to stop till that mission was successful. And after nine studios, I think eight engineers and about $230,000 pumped into the record, I made that record and I'm really happy with it in so many ways. Sadly, the balance of all that was the last person I worked with in Los Angeles, that engineer actually died of a heart attack last stroke just after the record. This was the last album that he made. Brian Kolstrom was his name.
Right.
Brian was in his 50s, and he did, like, Billy Idol records and was part of the Offspring's first record releases and so forth. So actually Jane's Addiction as well, I think, and Alice in Chains. So he had some incredible experiences and really knew how to mix a record of this magnitude, I guess.
Oh, but, wow. Yeah. That's too bad that he's lost to us, but wonderful that you got to have him work with you, you know, before he had to go.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, he was the kind of guy that he put Darth Vader head suits on while we were mixing. He'd start speaking in a Darth Vader voice while we were mixing, like, The Fall of Rome. I'm like, this guy's perfect. How could it get any more perfect?
That's great.
We had some good experiences. It was great.
Yeah. The next song I'd like to play from the album is Streets Fell Into My Window. The Alice in Wonderland-style music video for this track has garnered a lot of awards for best music video. Can you tell us a bit about what's behind this track?
It's very happy indeed. Basically, it's based on the story of Alice in Wonderland. Once upon a time, we would all know about the tsunami that hit across Indonesia and killed a lot of people. When I saw the news of that tragedy, I imagined, like, the streets coming through the window. Imagine being asleep and all of a sudden your entire existence just starts fading into the water. And I wanted to, I guess, create that experience in a song. It reminded me of the next life being Alice in Wonderland, going through a whole new journey. And that's why it's called Streets Fell Into My Window.
Okay, cool. Well, this is The Red Paintings from the new album, Streets Fell Into My Window.
Alice was considering, as well as she could, for the hot sun had made her very sleepy and very stupid, whether or not the pleasure of making a daisy chain would be worth the bother of getting up to pick the daisies, when suddenly a white rabbit ran straight past her. Now, there was nothing very odd about that, nor did she think it out of the ordinary to hear the rabbit say, oh dear, I'm going to be late.
Produced.
Well, that was The Streets Fell Into My Window by The Red Paintings from their new album, The Revolution Is Never Coming. I'm talking to my special guest, singer, songwriter and creator of the orchestral art band, The Red Paintings, Trash McSweeney. We're going to go to a break now. We'll be back after these messages.
Did you know about the Santa Cruz Art League on Broadway in Santa Cruz? Founded in 1919, it's 96 years young and provides a wonderful gallery space for local and national artists. It's a great place to view art with 14 shows a year and also to gain support if you're an artist yourself. There are art classes and weekend workshops, many taught by open studio artists. If you become a member, you receive a newsletter, discounts on classes, gifts and exhibit entries, images of your art on the Art League website, and guaranteed participation in the annual members show. It's also a great place to meet artists. Visit the Santa Cruz Art League at 562 Broadway or the website at scal.org. That's scal.org.
This portion of the show is sponsored by Dina Scopatoni, who is an award-winning fashion model, academic teaching modern art history at Cabrillo College, and Vogue fashion photographer. An ocular centrist, Dina's photographs range from fashion editorials to soul-catching portraits to evocative documentary images. The vibrant nature of her work evokes the glamour of Mario Testino, Annie Leibovitz, and Helmut Newton, while expressing an understanding of composition and contrast which is all her own. Trained as an art historian at the University of London's esteemed Courtauld Institute, Dina Scopatoni looks for the intellectual and visual contrasts in each of her photographs. If you're interested in viewing her wonderful work, you can go to dinascopatoni.com. That's dinascopatoni.com. Welcome back to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts, Trash McSweeney, singer-songwriter, creator of the orchestral art band, The Red Paintings. And again, just to let you know, if you want to find more information about the band and their touring schedule, you can go to theredpaintings.com. And again, they're coming to Santa Cruz, I think on the 22nd of June at the Catalyst. So check that out. I'm going to go. I would really suggest that you come and experience them live because they are amazing. We've talked about how you have these artists painting live on stage with you at gigs. I'm wondering how you find artists in the living canvases.
Well, people submit their works to us from all around the world, and we view those works. Sometimes we go on fan votes, so social media voting, I guess. But most of the time, we just check them out. We feel connected to those people. Nobody has to be some crazy, amazing artist. It's more about the way people approach us and tell us the passion in life and why they want to create and express themselves is why we would get somebody on stage. That's what's important to us. So that's kind of how we do it. Some nights, I'll just have canvases in the audience, or I'll put canvases/human canvases on stage, and I'll invite audience members to come up and create in real time, which is a pretty cool spontaneous experience. And that has just created some of the most amazing shows or memorable shows for me, because I'm so surprised by, I would say some of the, kids that get up and they didn't realize that they were so expressive and didn't realize the talent that they actually had. There's several people that I've had paint who've said they've never painted or sketched or illustrated in their lives and have created some of the most incredible works we've ever had on stage, and are now some of the full-time artists, or, you know, as a hobby, they do works themselves just for their everyday life. So yeah, it's just a good form of expressing yourself in an arena that normally you just sit and watch somebody else do it. You get to be a part of the show.
Right, yeah. Now, you do this whole living canvas thing. I imagine you must have to have a lot of guts to want to be a living canvas. And also, is this a particularly important element to what you're trying to create?
It is. It's very important. And I try to make sure every show that we have a human canvas. Now, we have human canvases of all sizes, shapes, and whatnot. There are some people that are extremely intimidated, and there are some people who just want to let it all hang out, which is certainly makes for an interesting show. There are some people that get a little excited on stage, especially the males, which is also interesting. But I guess at the end of the day, I just want people to walk away from our shows and feel like they were a part of something that was important to them and us, something that they can take home and tell their family about at the dinner table. It's a different type of scenario. I mean, last night, for example, we played in the human canvas after we got dressed up all chrome and had a massive Sacred Heart head, just started running out to the road and hitchhiking out of the show. Just wanted to hitchhike somewhere because you just felt liberated. And these things happen, so we have to be careful of that. But
I saw that on Facebook. He was completely silver, wasn't he?
Well, on this stage show is dedicated to Mexican folk art, and I'm obsessed with Virgin Mary iconography and Sacred Hearts and that kind of imagery. I feel really connected to it, and I always have. And so this is kind of the dream eye candy show that I've been able to create. So that's what this one's all about. We have these huge Sacred Heart heads, which the human canvases wear on this particular world tour.
Right. I mean, I think also what's wonderful about all of this is it's so organic. The performances are organic. And as you say, the audience really feels a part of it in terms of the music and the performance and the art and everything. It sort of envelops you. Is that what you're trying to do, is kind of bring people actually inside the experience?
100%, absolutely. I mean, I've kind of got this artistic delirium. The good thing is, you know, I see a lot of bands, and this is no offense to them, but I see bands that kind of do the same set, look the same, do the same jumping up and down every show. I never wanted Red Panics to be about that. I wanted Red Panics to be, like express themselves in real time. So what we're going through is how we're going to express ourselves, how we're going to play, and we're constantly going to change that stage show. So never, and no two Red Panics shows are ever the same. How can they be when there's always a different painter, a different body to be painted? And my head is just crazy, so I'm always expressing myself how I feel. And for example, I had a recent show this week. My sister passed away, and and she had a one-year-old. Well, her baby Zoe is about to turn one, and it's really affected me on different days on the touring because I can't be with my family because I'm jumping all around the world. And so it just hit midnight on my birthday, and I saw the clock just hit midnight, and I was about to go into the song Mad World. And I just couldn't play the song. It was like all I wanted for my birthday was for my sister to be alive again, because this only happened like 4 or 5 months ago. So I remember just starting Mad World, I looked at the clock and I just wanted to grab my guitar and smash it to bits because I'm still so frustrated about the situation. Mm. And so I just said to the crowd, I'm sorry, I can't play Mad World. And people are yelling, play the bloody song. Like, you can't not play it. I'm like, you don't understand. If I play it right now, I'm going to be an emotional mess. I cannot do this. Mm. And I walked off stage. And I was kind of done and came on and finished another song. But it's how I've started my whole journey with the Red Paintings or even my own life. I haven't been someone who's been in an institution and been given guidelines and rules and boundaries. I don't work like that. I work in a way where I'm totally free and open to how I feel. And I think that's important for people to see that in the audience as well, because I don't think in the 21st century we need another rock star. I don't think we need someone kind of... out there telling us how to be cool and what to wear. I think we need to show people, put a paintbrush in their hands and go, just express yourself. However you feel, just let it all go. Let all the pain, frustration, happiness, all those emotions, just let it all out, because you don't know what's deep down inside of you. And this allows you to find that. And I've seen that in people, and I've seen growth through people just from spending 45 minutes to an hour painting on stage with us.
Mm. And I think what's really important is authenticity. And I think we really, really need that in art at the moment and in the world. And I think, you know, that's really what you're doing, is you're really being authentic to who you are, and your art reflects that. And it gives people something to enter into that allows them to find that authenticity within themselves.
Yeah, that's true. I think that's why the punk movement was so cool when it started, because it was so authentic. And people were sick of the political stances of these, you know, men in suits and ties telling them how they should live their life and where they should put their money. Nobody wants to be told that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why the pump, and it was an important movement. I think with the Red Paintings and what I'm hearing from people and even in the media is that the Red Paintings have become kind of this new punk revolution for the times. It's not like I'm singing, you know, just screaming all the time, or not so much screaming, but just playing four chords. It's not about the sound.
Yeah.
Of the genre, it's about how we're expressing the sound, or how our level of communication to our audience and the topic areas that I choose to sing about make us the true essence of punk.
Yeah. Well, the final song I'd like to play from the album is Wasps. This is a huge rock track. So this is Wasps from the new album, The Revolution Is Never Coming, by the Red Paintings.
First appeared 52 minutes ago. Mexico City officials, as well as U.S. officials, have confirmed that these are not aircraft from either government's air force.
Clean your hands in the dirty water.
From Mazatlan to New York.
Wash your hair away the China doll in my...
They were not detected by radar by either country.
What am I? Past midnight.
Well, that was Wasps from the Red Painting's new album, The Revolution Is Never Coming. That's a huge track, Trash. Brilliant. We're coming right to the end of the interview. We've got about a minute left. So I just wanted to ask you, all art is about communication, as we've talked about. Is there an overarching message in your music, or are you conveying different things in different songs? We've just got about a minute left, so briefly.
I think that I am definitely conveying different things. I mean, life isn't as simple as one kind of subject, but ultimately this band is trying to say, if you want to create your own revolution, you've got to get off your butt and create it yourself. And for me, the revolution for me is to take care of animals, and I think a vegetarian slash vegan diet on this planet is going to ultimately save the human race, and that's it in a nutshell.
Right. Okay. So make the revolution yourself. Well, thanks so much for coming and talking to us, Trash. I really appreciate it. I know you're on this world tour that's very exhausting, and we look forward to you being here in Santa Cruz, definitely, on the 22nd.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And everybody, check out the Red Paintings at their website, theredpaintings.com. And thanks very much. I will look forward to seeing you next week. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland.